Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Do not question me about radio. Yeah. Other than never turning on my mic, I've got this thing nailed.
We've also got Alex Boone nailed down as our next guest, 95.7 The Game 49er analyst, former offensive lineman, appearing on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Alex, you watched that game last night, and I'll tell you, there was a lot of what I saw last night that harkened back to the best of the Harbaugh era, which obviously you were a part of. Play defense. Get there with four guys. And block your ass off in the running game, move the football on the ground. Like, that is the formula Jim Harbaugh used to restore credibility, and it looks like the 49ers have restored a little credibility with the exact same formula this season, doesn't it?
It's absolutely what I was going to say. You stole my line.
I'm sorry.
Finish the sentence.
Did we lose him?
Oh, no, it sounds like did I so steal his line that he decided to hang
That's
up
it.
On us?
He's
there you
done.
Go. Alex Boone, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll never
good
have
stuff.
Him again.
The Rhino. Hope you enjoyed it. I thought he was going to, you know, plant his flag. That's what Ohio State guys are doing these days.
I thought he was going to plant his flag in your forehead.
Well, that could happen too. I believe Alex is back now. Hello, Alex.
All right, listen. I wasn't that mad you stole my line, but you did steal my line because talk about the first play of the game. They just set the tempo. Wow.
It was good. Now, look, we're going to get into what Juszczyk's injury is going to mean if he is going to miss the next 4 to 6. Obviously, he's a huge part of their running game, and we'll ask you what they can do to, you know, have an understudy at a position you don't have a lot of backups for. They don't have a lot of depth at fullback. As a matter of fact, Juszczyk is the only legit fullback on the team. But I think an awful lot of their success is starting with a healthy Weston Richburg, who is really just gutting guys in the middle of that defense with the way that he's blocking right now. And Justin School, this guy, I mean, who expected Justin School to not, you know, he's the reason why you're not missing Joe Staley? Like, I wouldn't have bet on that.
Hey, how many times was he by himself on an island in that game against Myles Garrett? I was almost astonished because for as much as Myles Garrett talks about how good he is and how good he wants to be, that was your chance on Monday night against a guy. And then there would have been a bunch of people that said, hey, listen, he's a rookie, he's a draft pick, whatever. But, dude, you couldn't even do that. Justin School absolutely was one of the factors why they won that game and won it so heavily, too. Because you can't pick on a guy, especially when he's on an island doing it by himself. Like, hey, listen, I'll help the offense. I'll get guys out on routes. I can do this. Watch me, guys.
But how much of that, and I don't want to diminish what he did, but how much of that was the fact that the 49ers ran the ball 40 times, which is the best way to take a great pass rusher and make him irrelevant?
Listen, you just killed the man's credibility right there. Absolutely, the run game helps you out, right? Like when the defense is like, oh, my God, if this is zone again, I can't take it. And then it ends up being a quick pass. They're kind of distorted. What am I doing? Is the pass rush as effective as it should be? No, absolutely not. But he should thank the run game, but he had a big part in the run game, too. Don't forget that first play went to the left, right behind him.
Well, no, I wasn't talking about School as much as I was talking about Garrett, because Garrett isn't, to my knowledge, considered a great guy against the run. He's a guy who chases quarterbacks.
And, oh, absolutely.
And if you don't let him do that because you're running the ball as effectively as you are, doesn't that make life a lot easier for Justin School to the point where he doesn't have to face the Myles Garrett at his best, but a Myles Garrett who's basically irrelevant?
Absolutely, especially because they're so physical. I love this O-line because they're like a gritty bunch. They're a nitty-gritty bunch. And you said it, Weston Richburg, he absolutely is taking command right now. And how he's playing is fabulous. You can tell he's the field general out there. He's controlling where the offensive line goes. And I truly feel that their grittiness comes from him. He's always been a player like that. If you go back and look when he played with New York, he was always one of those guys that would finish a guy over the pile. Or if you were standing around the pile, he was going to make sure you were sorry. So when you have a guy like that that's leading your room, those other guys are like, you know what? That's all right.
Did we lose him again? It sounds like his phone dropped again.
What's weird? Yeah. Who knows?
And it was going so
well. I had
a
really good question, too.
Did you?
I was locked in for a big run game question. I was ready to rock. Was bracing for it.
Do you wonder if he's talking from the trunk of his car?
You think there's a problem?
His own car or someone else's car?
I don't know. But, well, first of all, I don't think he's a kidnapped victim because he probably would have mentioned that in the first answer.
You would think so. You'd, like, knock on wood twice to let us know you're being kidnapped.
That might be his man cave.
When he said Damon stole his line, were we supposed to know that was a sign that he'd been kidnapped?
No, I think he's back. Is he back?
No, Albie's currently trying to get him on the phone.
Oh, we got the thumbs down. What was your question going to be? Dazzle me.
Well, obviously, we've seen this Niners run game succeed with different offensive linemen, with different running backs, with all sorts of different quarterbacks, all sorts of different arrangements. My question is, why? Is it Kyle Juszczyk? Is it great scheming? Is it specifically the execution of the scheme? What do they do at a higher level? Is he back now?
Alex Boone is back. I don't know how much you heard of that.
Trying out the question.
I heard the whole thing. I think it's a lot of everything. I think it's a lot of scheming. I think it's a lot of the grittiness. I think it's a lot of these running backs. And you're talking about missing a guy like Kyle Juszczyk. What are you going to do? What if you put two of those guys out there at once? Yeah. Imagine the dilemma the defense would have. I mean, that's
go Coleman and Breida?
Yeah, I mean, put them both out there. Hey, listen, maybe he's going to be in motion a little bit more. Maybe they're going to move everybody around. Tevin Coleman out there, Breida, Mostert. And put them all out there. Why not shake it up? Let's see what the defense really wants to do.
Kyle Shanahan should install the wishbone this week just to screw with McVay and the Rams.
Here's my question, though. If you were to put two or three of those guys out there, how would you consider that personnel? Would you consider that a 12, a 22? I mean, you're looking at it like, man, they could do a lot of things with two of those guys out there at once.
How are they going to solve the problem of Juszczyk's absence maybe over the course of the next 8 weeks?
I think a lot of it is going to be sticking to their identity. Listen, we are a run-first team. If we have to do it out of more 12 personnel, 11 personnel, however it is, we still have to run the ball. That is the identity of this team. It is making teams, like, quiver and, like, hey, we don't want any of this at all.
I wonder, as someone who's been in the locker room, Dante Pettis was put forward in the offseason as the guy poised to seize the number one opportunity. And, you know, last night, dropping that pass on the slant that looked like he might have run for a touchdown that was perfectly thrown, it's one drop. And ultimately, everybody drops one ball eventually. But he seems to do this right at the moment where he has an opportunity to actually seize a role. At what point do the guys around you in the locker room start to think, maybe this just isn't happening?
Oh, man, that's tough. I mean, there's so many factors that go into that. I mean, how is he in the rooms? How is he on the field? I mean, I think back to a guy like that, it'd be like a Laquon Treadwell, a guy that just never caught anything, though. You know, and you were right. Like, dude, how long are we going to give this guy a chance? You know, it wasn't like he was the best teammate. It wasn't like he was the best run blocker for the running back. So you look at a guy like that and you go, hey, dude, what are you contributing to this offense? Because you're not catching anything and you're certainly not blocking. So what are you doing here? I don't think that's the case with Dante Pettis. I don't think the team looks at him like that. So I think they're going to keep rolling with him and say, hey, man, we got your back.
How long, though, and let's ask the downside question first. Who tends to lose faith in a player first, his teammates or the coaches?
I think his teammates, because they know how he is truly acting. I mean, you can't really put facades on around the players, right? We know when you're not really being yourself. And I think that when you're not doing well and you start to kind of change around your teammates and guys are like, man, is this guy really giving everything he's got? That's when a guy gives up. You know, that's when a guy's like, hey, man, we're all out here doing this for the collective and you're kind of doing it for yourself or you're not doing it for the collective. You got to go. And a coach will say, hey, listen, give this guy a chance. He's going through something. We're going to work it out. We're going to figure it out. They're always trying to be the peacemakers and everything.
All right. This one is in your offensive lineman expertise. Booger McFarland last night said he thought Nick Bosa was as good hand fighting as pretty much anybody in the league, which seemed like an incredible compliment for a guy playing his fourth career game. Is he really that special when it comes to battling with the hands up front?
Absolutely. I think one of his biggest moves so far this year has been the hand swipe to inside. And not only that, but his hand swipe to inside, which knocks the guard off his complete track, takes out two other guys, falls down, gets up, and still gets the sack. I mean, this guy's hands and feet are incredible. And I think that the Browns might have slept on him a little bit, like, hey, listen, maybe he's not as good as we thought. Joel Patino is a good guard, and he ran through Joel Patino last night for a sack, which was incredible.
I'm guessing you, like every other Buckeye, very much appreciated the Bosa flag plant sack dance.
I loved everything about it. As soon as he started to do it, I started laughing hysterically. I knew what he was doing. I loved it.
How much did it piss you off when Baker did that at the Shoe?
You know what? I thought somebody was going to go after him, especially because people at the Shoe are a little crazy. But
yes, they are.
You know what? We got our revenge in the end.
Good to talk to you, as always. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thank you, guys.
Alex Boone here on 95.7 The Game. Not kidnapped. Three phone calls. Ultimately, it all paid off.
He finished his block.
He did. He did finish his block. He took it to the second level. He even moved up to take out the safety. It's time now for the 8K per day cash contest. Your chance to win $1,000 by just texting the code word email, E-M-A-I-L. Do that to 72881. Message and data rates apply. Much more still coming up around the corner. And someone even says, hey, are you guys going to talk about this NBA China situation? Are you going to talk about the A's stadium situation? We will. Yeah.
Let's tell them no.
Yeah, no, we will. We will. It's ridiculous. As always, stick around. Much more coming up. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
What, do we got to worry about rolling blackouts today? Thanks a lot, PG&E. Bang up job as always.
I remember these from when I was in college. We had them in Southern California back in, I want to say 2001. I'm dating myself, but yeah, good times.
I don't doubt that you're dating yourself, but
good,
that's another story.
Times.
No, apparently the wind is supposed to be up and... So they've been doing blackouts in other counties in Central California, North Central California.
Yeah.
Now it's Marin. So,
but not
if that's
not,
what you got to do to minimize fire danger. Then do that.
Not in the city. We're still going to have the radio the rest of the week. We good?
Yeah.
All right.
I hope so.
Just bring out your transistors just in case.
I'll be listening to you guys tomorrow from home.
I thought you were
fasting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought there was no external stimuli allowed at all.
Yeah, I like I said to Damon before the show,
you're flexible.
I exclusively participate in the food-based traditions of Judaism. So that means every year I fast on Yom Kippur and I cut out bread for Passover because in my mind, Judaism's all about food and that's how I choose to show my respect to my heritage. But I'm not too particular about the great details of Yom Kippur. Lights off and all that stuff.
Keep the Old Testament. I'm here for the noodle kugel.
Noodle kugel is so good.
Especially the crispy edge pieces, the corner pieces.
Woo, yeah, a little crunchy noodle. Oh, man. You know what? That might be something I do during the day tomorrow. The problem with Yom Kippur is it's really, you make it worse if you try to cook during the day.
Being just an honorary Jew, I'll be hosting the show tomorrow.
Right on.
Thank you. We'll miss you.
I'll appreciate you guys just thinking of me.
Thank you.
You know, hoping that my atonements are
get it right
are
it,
sufficient.
Atone for the whole damn show.
I got some things to do. Yeah,
do.
Come in clean on Thursday or don't come in at all.
No, that's the plan.
So look, I want to. We've got a great NFL show still up. We've been talking NFL this entire time. Peter King today at 5 o'clock. Sean Salisbury joins us in an hour from now. A Tuesday trifecta with an awful lot of NFL stuck into that as well. We'll be planting the flag in today's Tuesday trifecta. Couple of other things. Couple of other just business items that we have to get through here. This past weekend, even though we didn't have a football game to go to on Sunday, we actually had a basketball game to go to on Sunday. It wasn't something that you had to go to. It was just a preseason game. But it was the first ever game. Excuse me. Well, not Sunday. That was Saturday. It was the first ever preseason game for the Warriors at Chase Center. And while some people chose to fixate on the Warriors' size, lack thereof, depth, while some people chose to focus on the Lakers' size or incredibly top-heavy as they look at times, I was just kind of trying to soak it all in, take a little from everything, and I spent as much time walking the concourse during the game as I did paying attention to the game during the game, which was one handedly and convincingly by the Los Angeles Lakers.
You made the right choice.
Yeah, there were several people who I saw who came in with what I thought were preconceived notions of what they wanted to see, and they indeed saw it. I know for a fact that some person chose to cover the opening of a billion-dollar arena based on the fact that she didn't have an outlet convenient to her by her laptop computer. I thought the building was spectacular. I think it is spectacular. I think that scoreboard, as soon as you see it, you wonder how you ever watched a basketball game without it. The amount of information that up there is enough to distract you almost. It got loud when it needed to. I thought it was a really, really impressive night, Warriors basketball withstanding. It was that building kicks ass. And let me tell you, as someone who lives in San Francisco, I'm going to have a lot of fun playing in there when that is open for concerts and whatnot. Like, I was texting my wife. I'm like, we got a new little playground to enjoy here. It's an expensive one. We're going to have to save our shekels to get in here from time to time. But, man, it's impressive. It's nice. It's got that new arena smell, if you will.
If it can't be nice on day one, then it's failed miserably and can never save itself.
So, all right. Well, Levi Stadium wasn't nice on day one.
No, it was nice on day one. I was there for the actual first game they ever played, which was a soccer game. And maybe because the crowd wasn't as big, it wasn't awful.
When you also
but once they transferred into big crowds, they realized, oh, getting in and out of this is a nightmare. Oh, half the stadium is basically a convection oven. Oh, the team's not very good.
Look, it was good last night. I mean, the stadium was full by the second quarter. It was, as packed as I've ever seen it in there. The fans were a little late trickling in. But second and third quarter, man, that place was full, upper deck level full.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they do, not against Washington. Well, they're in Washington. So basically week eight is the next time they're home, I think. Yeah, they play Carolina.
Carolina week eight.
And that'll be your regular day game on a Sunday. So the late arriving crowd shouldn't be an issue because it's going to be a late arriving crowd on a Monday night at 5:30.
Of course
just
it'll
by,
be.
Just by definition.
Look, it might be just California wishy-washiness makes things a late arriving crowd.
No, you can't drive at 5:30. There's no one moves at 5:30.
Right. I've also seen plenty of 1 o'clock kickoffs poorly attended on a Sunday afternoon.
Well,
so I'm not going to put that all on just the traffic patterns. It's fans getting in there, trickling in late, and they need to get in a little bit earlier. Again, it was good. This isn't even about Levi Stadium. Chase Center. What opened? Matt, I know that you were there on Saturday night. What were your just initial impressions of the place?
A few things. First of all, walking out onto the court, because we were there for media day, but we only went in the practice court, which was beautiful and covered in media and whatever.
Ew.
Exactly.
You have to spray for that.
The main bowl on the floor, and granted, most people will never go there, but it really does feel the whole intimacy thing that they were selling to us is real. Like, you feel not so different from when you were in Oracle. It feels like the stands are on top of you.
Yeah.
And actually, as you get higher up, you can see there is more space. You can see that the there's a little flatter grade to the seats. They do go a little further back on the lower level. But it still feels like you're in a tight arena that will be able to really rock when they give it reason to do so. The second thing is that scoreboard. When you are down on the floor, you don't understand because you're underneath it. You see the mini scoreboards and you're like, man, those mini scoreboards are pretty big. And then Ray Ritter tells you, yeah, they're the size of the old Jumbotron at Oracle.
Right, right. What you used to think was the big scoreboard is now the tiny scoreboard.
It's the tiny scoreboard underneath the big scoreboard. And you're like, yeah, I guess that is pretty big. But when you get up to at least the to the sort of broadcast level, and I'm sure just as much so on the upper deck. The sheer size of that thing, it's remarkable. I mean, I haven't been to Dallas, but it feels like how I imagine that scoreboard feels in a football stadium. It fills the room, and it is the biggest, sparkling, clearest image you have ever seen.
It's amazing. Some of the just the wipes, like Warrior Replay and just the graphic packages that they used were like, wow, that looked incredibly good. It's not just that scoreboard. There are other shot charts and other scoreboards all around the place. There are so many places to put your eyes. The concourse has great local dining options all over the place. Never once felt crowded. Never once saw a line so long I would have refused to get into it, no matter how long or I was willing to wait for that item. You know, there's certain lines. I don't care what's at the end of that. Kiss from a pretty girl, sandwich I want, doesn't matter. I'm not interested at all. Line's too long. I didn't see any of that there.
Nope.
It looks like that place is, it's going to do very well for itself.
And we can say, well, the only people who get the great amenities are going to be the richest of the rich people. And to a degree, that's true. I mean, the best amenities are always reserved for the people who spend the most money in any environment. But even just the normal vending.
Just you're walking on the concourse.
Just walking on the concourse. It is beautiful.
Yeah, you used to go up to a, it basically looks just like the other thing that was selling peanuts and popcorn next to it. This one's selling pizza, this one's selling hot dogs, but they all look exactly the same. Every single one of these is a tailored little customized boutique-y like looking stand.
It's like being in one of those fancy food courts. Like
yeah.
If you've ever been to the Public Market in Emeryville, where it's like, you know, upscale and stuff from food trucks that have like permanent stops in this little sort of upscale food court. It's like being at one of those sorts of places, except through that door is the game.
I wasn't there. I have nothing to offer.
Thank you.
I mean, I could speak out of ignorance, but I'll wait till the next segment.
I mean, had you gone, the chances of you having nothing to offer are still on the table. Would you suggest that?
Yeah, because I'm not interested in any of the things you were talking about. I'm only interested in about how it supports a basketball game.
But you do, don't
well,
you? Don't
all
you
these
think
things that go to supporting a basketball game, right?
No,
everything
no, no.
that we say.
No, they don't. They go to the customer experience, which I'm not interested in.
Right.
I want to sit in a chair, preferably facing the court.
But putting aside what
watch
you
the game, and then leave. That
we,
is me. And
we know what you
me.
Want to do. But I'm sure you can recognize that the customer experience does eventually come around and affect the whole team. Like, the franchise is affected by the customer experience. The better the customer experience, frankly, the better the chance they can put forth a good product.
Well, they put forth a good product in a place that people always thought was kind of inadequate. So
people loved Oracle, though. The experience at Oracle was not under much fire.
No, but you couldn't admire the concourse in the hallways the way you do in this Taj Mahal with baskets.
Of course not.
Well, there was nothing
to
admire.
The Celtics won a million championships in a glorified urinal. To me, I'm only interested in the sports end of it. The rest of it is somebody else's problem. If it's great, good for that. I'm just telling you what I care about. This is not me being anti-rich, although the rich should be destroyed. This is just me going, I only want one thing out of this place. And that's the sense that I'm in a basketball place. I will see that having gone there several times.
Do you think happy, satisfied, I feel like I'm getting my money's worth, bang for my buck fans create a better or worse home court advantage?
I think the team court creates the home court advantage. And the fans go along for the ride. I don't think fans start that experience. I think players start the experience and the fans react to it.
Right. No one cheers for the shot not hit.
Okay. Well, then you proved my point. I go there for the basketball. The basketball takes care of everything else.
Right. But teams do feed off energy and motivation. There is a more symbiotic relationship between how a team is playing and how a crowd is reacting in the sport of basketball, probably more than any other sport out there.
No, they create that. The team creates that. The fans react to it. You can't move me off that. I've seen too many great teams play in lousy places and create the atmosphere that you're looking for.
Right. Well, no seat has ever cheered for anyone. I mean, it doesn't matter if your building was oblong or oval or square.
If the seat is empty, it's because nobody wants to go. And the reason why nobody wants to go is because the team is bad.
Explain the Oakland A's. They were great this year. Nobody wanted to go there.
Because the A's have spent the better part of 15 years telling people that it's a lousy place to go watch baseball.
But you don't think that's true?
And Warriors are now doing the opposite of that. They're inviting everyone in and saying this is a great place to watch a game. So what you said matters over there. Why you don't apply to it mattering over here?
Because
seems very selective of the points you like to make in the conversation.
Because you're talking about a new building as opposed to an old one. The A's have trouble convincing people to come out on a Tuesday night. Because they have told you for 15 years, this place is beneath us and it's beneath you, and we would leave tomorrow if we could. If you keep saying that, people will believe you and they'll stop coming. They'll find other ways to either consume the game or ignore you entirely.
How can you say that when you, like,
because
you know that place stinks?
Because I'm up in my lungs.
But you know that place stinks.
But it's not a okay.
You're saying nobody would have noticed if the A's hadn't told them? I don't buy that.
Well, I don't care.
That's is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is if you try to convince people that they're going to have a great experience, even if the building is kind of run down, they might take you up on it.
Okay.
But if you tell them it's a dump, there's nothing you can do to get masses of people in there because you're telling them ahead of time, it doesn't matter what the team does, you're going to have a crappy time because we told you you are.
But yes. If the team is so good, it's going to create all the energy that you said doesn't come from fans in the first place. So, which is it?
It's symbiotic. It's all
It's exactly what I said.
No, no,
I said
no, no,
it's
no,
symbiotic,
no, no.
And you meant
no,
on a
stop yelling
5-minute opinion
stop
diatribe.
Yelling. Stop yelling. I will explain to you why this is different. Because in an old building, you can do one of two things. You can either say, it's a great old building with character, and we will entertain you. Or you can say, it's a decrepit old building. It should have been condemned long ago. Don't come here if you don't want your friends to make fun of you. The A's chose path B, and they are paying for it now because it is hard to convince fans to come to a place where you have been the one to tell them it's a lousy place to go. The Warriors never said
yes,
that the
no one's debating any of that.
Okay,
think.
Well, but that's the point.
Who's talking about the A's other than you? We didn't
you brought the A's up.
Hold on. There's separate issues here to me. One of them is the A's have trashed that building, and that has certainly contributed to why they can't get anybody to come to it. Another separate issue is the building does suck, and fans have had struggles ranking as seriously as overflowing as sewage. So, and that I think was more players than fans, but like this is a building that's a disaster that I would argue, unlike Oracle, where if you tell people it's a blast, they might agree with you, the Coliseum is noticeably not a blast and noticeably problematic. And so that, in addition to the A's foul sense of humor about it, the fact that it sucks has contributed to people not wanting to go there.
Right.
And if we agree that the fact that a place sucks can contribute to people not wanting to be there, then I think we have to admit that the fact that a place is awesome might make
right.
some
Look,
people want to go.
Except that you guys live in the city where they had a massive, decrepit, urine-smelling building in the old Chicago Stadium. But what did the Bulls do and what did the Blackhawks do except tell you, this is a great place to come and see a game. And people, they've sold that place out through thick and thin, up until the last couple of years with the Bulls, and they've been selling it out with the Blackhawks for almost 20 years.
Well, that the United Center isn't so bad, but Chicago Stadium was a
but
a
the last 20 years, but people came.
I know
because you told them.
But again,
you can do this.
But no one's debating that you can sell an old building better than the A's have. We're just
but
saying
that's
that
the point. That is exactly
you can
the point.
You can do a sales job on an old building. You can do a hack job on a brand new building, but that is to overcome the nature of the building. You can attempt to do that, and sometimes you might succeed, but that doesn't mean that the nature of the building itself is meaningless.
Look, and it's just it's owner competency. You know, is my owner good at just owning a team, or is he good at other things? Is there a reason for me to not feel like a sucker every single time I turn around and hand this person my hard-earned cash?
I mean, that's the other thing. I'm going to spend, for the people who can afford it, hundreds of dollars to go to this place. I'm going to feel a lot better about the fact that it's a great experience and looks beautiful and the food's great versus the alternative.
And look, it just comes down to ownership mattering and the whole point today with the A's being denied whatever by the Oakland City Council. Look, if I'm Oakland, I'm not giving the A's a sweetheart real estate deal to help then fund another real estate deal. It's ridiculous. You know what gets things done in real estate in the Bay Area? Money, top dollar on the open market. It's just insane. And people are like, well, this is now not even an A's issue anymore. This is a city council issue. It's always an ownership issue. When the guy is the billionaire with the huge checkbook who refuses to cut the huge billionaire check, that's a problem. The fact that you're in this situation is an ownership problem.
Part of it is, yeah, it's an ownership problem. You could just cut the check. The other side of it is, look, if I'm Oakland, I am not trying to jam this thing up, man. Because unlike football, unlike even basketball, baseball's 81 home dates.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That is business. That is stuff happening. If that stadium is on the waterfront, yeah, it's also going to be a zoo and they're going to have transportation problems, but they're going to make a ton of money for Oakland businesses.
Well, we got breaking news.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I was about to tell you.
We got breaking news. Can I get breaking news out?
95.7 The Game Breaking News. Powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire.
Who says you can't go home again? Oh. Doug Wilson has just announced that the San Jose Sharks are re-signing Patrick Marleau. Patty's back.
Ray, tell me if I'm wrong.
Oh, you probably are, but you ease yourself.
This feels like a sad and desperate attempt to curry favor with a fan base that's about to watch a bad season of hockey.
I don't understand the reason, the move for a different reason than that.
Why did Ned Coletti do this?
Well, Ned was drunk, as he often is. No,
never should have let Ned Coletti drive this thing.
I think the reason they signed him, I mean, they're not going to win a nostalgia game with this. What they're going to do is try to move one of their really good left wingers to the right side because their right wings are awful. And people said that when the season started. It's been true through three games. And putting Marleau on the left side, because he's available and cheap, basically allows them to move somebody to the right side and give them at least a little balance, because Marlowe's only costing them $1 million. And this was after a year in which he was making upwards of $6 million in Toronto.
So Nostalgia. Basically,
he was available. And
why was he available?
What's he got left?
Well, because he got traded to Carolina, and Carolina didn't want him, so they released him.
What's he got left? What did he do last year? Well, anything? Did he have a season?
This is the point I'm trying to make. He had 16 goals and 21 assists in all 82 games. The one thing he has done is play virtually every game almost every year of his career. The endurance of a Patrick Marleau is remarkable, but he's not good at hockey anymore, and he's 40 years old.
Not that he's not good at hockey. He's not what he used to be, and he played last year in Toronto on a team that had guys who were going to get lots more minutes than he did because they're lots younger and lots better.
He's not an impact player anymore. How's that?
That's fair to say.
Okay.
Teal sweater, magic back.
Donskoy!
You're welcome.
He's no Donskoy at this point.
Who is? 888-957-9570 is the number. There's one thing about the Cleveland Browns I think we all have to agree on. They have the best nickname punter maybe in the history of nickname punters. We'll come back with a tribute to the Scottish Hammer. Incredible. Your team sucks, but you got a Scottish Hammer. That's really good. 888-957-9570. All of this coming up courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
It was an unbelievably successful night for the San Francisco 49ers. Sean Salisbury comes on by at 4 o'clock to talk about it, about a very busy week 5 in the NFL coming to a head. 49ers win, Raiders win. Sean Salisbury at 4:20. Excuse me, 4:20 is when Sean Salisbury joins us. Looking forward to that. Just a little breaking news about Patrick Marleau coming back with the San Jose Sharks. Hooray, hurrah. Someone says, hey, what do you think about this story about the NBA in China? Look, we got to get back to the NFL, but this is worthy of a little discussion right here. As a matter of fact, I'm glad that I had a little time because I walked in yesterday to our remote ahead of the Monday Night Football game. And I said, guys, I'm glad that today is a really heavy football show because I haven't read enough about this NBA China story and the Daryl Morey tweet and what he did and what he did that was so wrong or so offensive. Like, this is an incredibly nuanced, not easy to just disseminate based on the way Twitter outrage is blowing. What a you-know-what storm. Well, this is really something else, and I don't know who walks away from this looking good. And you know it's bad when Steve Kerr, who is as geopolitically savvy a human out there, is just saying, thanks, but no thanks when asked about this.
Actually, I don't. I mean, it's a really, really bizarre international story, and a lot of us don't know what to make of it. So it's something I'm reading about, and just like everybody is, but I'm not going to comment further.
It's such a busy and complicated story. I don't even really know where to get into it because I don't want to spend much time on it here. I can only tell you that the NBA is making a choice. And the choice is dollars over any alignment with the notion of human rights. I mean, that's it. If you want to do business with China, you got to look the other way on a whole lot of things. Like, did you really like the bird's nest and the opening ceremony? Do you realize that old ladies were bulldozered probably right in their house to make that happen? But we all watched it and thought it was spectacular. I mean, you got to make choices when you're dealing with a communist country, which the NBA decided we're going to deal with on a massive business level. And basically, communist China just came and said, we don't want you talking about that. And we hold more money on this end than you do. So you're going to do it our way. And it looks like the NBA is going to say, okay.
Or kind of not, because Daryl Morey still has a job. And we're now at a point where CCTV, the Chinese state television, they may not broadcast any NBA games. They've already taken a couple preseason games playing that were supposed to be played in China off TV. And I think those games are now going to be canceled. And here's the statement, a quote from the statement released by CCTV, which is to say by the Chinese government. We're strongly dissatisfied and oppose Adam Silver's claim to support Morey's right to freedom of expression. We believe that any remarks that challenge national sovereignty and social stability are not within the scope of freedom of speech. Which is, that's just authoritarian mumbo jumbo.
Well, look, it's not mumbo jumbo. It's very clear.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That is authoritarian sort of boilerplate is what it is.
Well, the one country who definitely doesn't have a lot to tell me about free speech is China.
Yeah, and they're not even pretending. They're just like, sure, free speech, whatever, but not if you're talking about us. You can't just talk about us. And the NBA might have to make a decision between standing up for freedom of speech and airing games for 2 billion people. That, no matter what you think of morality in business, that is a difficult proposition to confront.
But it's a linear one, because at some point you either have to tell the Chinese, well, too bad, or you tell the Chinese, what can we do to make you happy? And you know where the starting price is.
Yeah, it's Daryl Morey's job.
Right. And the fact that he hasn't been fired yet tells me nothing, because when Daryl Morey gets it, as I believe he will, not justified.
You still think he will?
I still think he will. They'll try as best they can to do it on the QT.
So that it doesn't seem like it's directly related to this.
6:30
even
Friday?
Even though there's
6:30 this Friday?
Even though there's no chance of anybody not drawing that conclusion, they're going to try.
But if that's going to happen, you are essentially saying that the NBA is going to blackball Daryl Morey because it doesn't do them any good if someone snaps him right up, which in a free market, somebody would.
Well, here's that's exactly what I'm saying, for the same reason that you saw what happened to Colin Kaepernick, for the same reason that you see, you know, lots of decisions. Like, Donald Sterling doesn't own the Clippers today because he was in danger of costing his partners money. Daryl Morey is in trouble today because he is in danger of costing his boss's partners money. Colin Kaepernick, rightly or wrongly, was perceived as a guy who could cost the owners money. It is the one third rail that trumps any level of human rights on any level with people who have a lot of money and want more. It's just, to me, the math is simple. The 30 owners of the NBA are not going to walk away from that kind of cash to protect one employee.
Somebody says, look, it's not complicated at all. Not making a comment and turning a blind eye is simply folding. The question is, will you fold when Kerr is on your show? Well, what do you mean? Well, look at it this way.
First of all,
is there a single question that has ever needed to be asked that this show hasn't asked its guest? Like, I mean, like, if you've got any example of us taking the easy way out of an interview ever, what is that? Like, hold on. Steve Kerr works for the NBA. The NBA and every employee in it was sent, in one way or another, a do not talk about this memo today. Steve Kerr, he's got a boss. And it's a bigger boss than just Joe Lacob.
Yeah.
And if Steve Kerr is aware of anything, it's where his bread gets buttered. And this guy, who might have a great many opinions about great many hot button subjects, I don't think there's a single hot button subject in the American political landscape which he can speak in support of or in support of against that's going to cost the NBA possibly $1 billion. The next sentence about China could cost the NBA $1 billion. That's why people aren't speaking many sentences on this.
Here's what he actually said also after he said, I don't have thoughts. What I found is that it's very easy to speak on issues that I'm passionate about and that I feel like I'm well versed on, and I've found that it makes the most sense to stick to topics that fall in that category. So I try to keep my comments to those things, and so it's not difficult. It's more I'm just trying to learn. He may still comment on this. It may blow over by the time he feels like he has anything to say, or he may never feel like he has anything to say. But first of all, it's not Steve Kerr's job to comment on every human rights issue in the world and tell you how he feels about it. And second of all, yeah, he's got bosses. That's just the way the world works. And there are some people who have enough power to stick their finger in the eye of the bosses and say whatever they want at any time. And other people have to find their spot on that scale. These are the things I can comment on. These are the things I cannot.
I don't know that I'm going to defend him or accuse him of anything, not because, you know, there are things he can't talk about. He could talk about anything he wants. He's making a choice based on what the strictures are as an employee of the Golden State Warriors, which is to say an employee of the National Basketball Association. The troublesome part here is not that he's not speaking. The troublesome part here is that the NBA is not speaking. And they are the ones who, frankly, have to make a choice who they're going to knuckle under to. Do they tell the Chinese to take their money and, you know, go build their own basketball history? Or do they say, nah, we'd rather have the cash?
And by the way,
and I think I know which way they're going.
But it is, I do think it is complicated by the fact that one of the only things that has had bipartisan support in our country since a while, is not bowing down to China on business issues. There are senators from both sides of the aisle saying you cannot kowtow to China. So, you got a few billion dollars on one side and a foreign government, and then you got your own government on the other side of it. It is a lot.
But it's also the same government that has taken a knee to China many times when it's their money that's involved. So it's, you know, anybody can talk when they don't have skin in the game. Adam Silver has skin in this game, and to the extent that he and his 30 bosses want radio silence on this, they're going to get it. So the decision is not about what Steve Kerr says or doesn't say. The decision is what Adam Silver says or doesn't say.
Look, it's what happens when you want to do business with something that is diametrically opposed to what you not only say is your political beliefs, but your moral beliefs. You know, just wanting to do business with China means you're willing to compromise a whole bunch of things. Period and end of story. And I just know that somebody out there is saying, you know, stick to sports. Politics and sports don't mix.
Except they do.
Yeah, except...
Oh, they're absolutely married together.
They are inseparable,
and that's,
especially in 2019. And to say otherwise is to raise your hand and volunteer how uninformed and how dense... in how unaware and incapable of dealing with nuanced subjects you truly are. I mean, like, don't be in the crowd of this doesn't belong. This is fascinating. What we know about it, what we can tell you definitively about it, none of us are experts in this particular issue or topic or subject, and we're not going to pretend to be as such. But it's nuts. It's crazy that this is... Again, I didn't think this was as big yesterday when we sat down to talk about it. And then you guys were like, no, check this out. And I read more about it. And it's just it's unbelievable. And I don't know how you stop it. And by the way, the New Jersey Nets owner is one of the guys kicking the Rockets out of China. So, I mean, it's really weird.
Well, but that's 4 days old. He hasn't said anything since. So he got the memo, too.
By the way, it's our 4 o'clock hour. Everyone needs to get the memo on that.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.